Let me start you off with a little story here this evening. Once upon a time, and not so very many years ago, I was having a conversation with a lady who was struggling in her faith. But this was no ordinary struggle. Most people who come to the priest to talk about their struggles in the faith have troubles with a relationship. Maybe it's somebody in their home. Maybe it's their spouse. Sometimes they have trouble with their finances. Sometimes they have trouble wrestling with their own weakness or with understanding a teaching of the church. Sometimes they struggle with the latest scandal that they hear in the news. But that wasn't this lady. Her struggles were unique, unlike any other conversation I've ever had before, because they went right to the heart of what it means to believe in God in the first place. Here's what she said. She says, I have a hard time believing that God is all good. You know, when I look around and I see rivers of manifest evil in the world, and I have a hard time believing that it's so important that I take time to pray every single day when, let's face it, we take time to pray and we don't see any difference whatsoever. And she went on and on and on in very unusual frankness and honesty. And she says, you know what, let me sum it all up just by saying this. I've got a question that I can't answer, and that is, why does God hide from us? And I said, what do you mean hide from us? And she says, well, let me put it this way. If you were God, and the only thing you wanted in the entire world was that your people would know you and love you and that you would accomplish this perfectly just by letting people know how good you really are, don't you think you could do a better job of getting the word out than God does? Why does God hide from us? Very, very unusual conversation. And the reason why I bring this up is because her concerns are your concerns as well. You may have never gone and spoken to a priest about it. You may never have even put it into words. But those very same concerns plague you and threaten to undermine your faith every day as you look at your life and the world around you, and you look up to heaven and you say, God, where are you, or are you AWOL? I'm not going to recount the entire conversation here, but I will say this. The answer to the question of why God hides is wrapped up with the understanding that to be in relationship with Almighty God is to be awash in mystery. Now, what's mystery? Mystery does not mean, you know, that you don't understand it, that you can't understand. Mystery means you do understand, but you'll never understand completely. Believe it or not, you've got plenty of mystery in your life right now. You ever stop to realize that you're a mystery to yourself? You ever scratch your head and thought, you know, what was I thinking? Or, I didn't even act like myself. Why did I do this? You're a mystery to yourself. Tell you one of the biggest mysteries in the whole world. Men and women, they will never understand each other. Ever, 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 ever. But that doesn't mean we can't understand. We'll never understand completely. Please God, one day we all get up to heaven and you'll stare God in the face. And as you do so, you'll know him better and you'll love him better. And after a million centuries, you will not have scratched the surface of understanding who God really is. To be in relationship with God is to be awash in mystery. And the reason why these things are often so hard to understand isn't anybody's fault. It's just the fact that God is infinite and you are not. And whenever the infinite God tries to act in the context of our finite lives, the one who's finite just isn't always going to get it. I think a really good analogy for this would be if you own a pet, right? You own a dog, you own a cat. And maybe there's something you want to tell that dog to do or tell that cat to do. And you know, it's hard to, and it's not your fault, it's not the animal's fault. It's just that little animal is an animal and you're a human being. Well, there's a finite difference between you and a pet. But there's an infinite difference between you and God, which is a way of saying you must become comfortable with the concept of mystery. And that means you will have to act on things even before you fully understand. And my message to you here this evening is very simple. When you do, God's greatest works are shown forth. That's our message here this evening. Now, our readings are all about gratitude. But I'm not going to talk about gratitude here this evening. We're going to talk about that another time. Because there's something that you have to have that precedes gratitude. And that something is humility. If you are awash in your own ego, you will not be thankful for anything. Egotistical souls are entitled. Only grateful souls are humble. And humility is the ground on which we have to meet God. And I'm telling you, when you do, that's when God works his greatest marvels. It's always been that way, all the way down through history. Remember Abraham, back in the book of Genesis? And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever what God asked Abraham to do. 75-year-old man, God says to Abraham, Abraham, I've chosen you. Get up and go to a land I will show you. And Abraham had to scratch his head and thought to himself, well, that doesn't make any sense. Can't you find somebody a little bit younger? And as long as you're asking me to go across the country, do you think maybe you'd do me the courtesy of at least telling me where I'm going? No. You, Abraham, at the age of 75, get up and I'll tell you when you get there. And Abraham had the humility to obey God, and he became the father of all the faithful. Or the Blessed Virgin Mary. Once and only once in my life did I ever speak to someone who claims to have seen the Blessed Virgin Mary in an approved apparition of the church. I won't get into it, but this is not an unapproved, but an approved one. I asked her what the Blessed Virgin Mary looked like. She says, I can't describe how beautiful she was, but the one thing that struck me was that she was not a full-grown woman. She was a little teenager. And the scriptures tell us this little girl, 14, 15, who knows how old. The angel Gabriel says, will you be the mother of the long-awaited Messiah? And she wasn't living with a spouse at the time, and it made no sense. But she said, let it be done unto me according to your word, and all blessings accrued. This is the way it is when we act in faith, even before we fully understand. And that's the story of our readings today. Now, did you hear the first reading? Second book of Kings. It makes no sense whatsoever, just based on what you heard, because it's the tail end of a much longer story. Let me tell you the rest of the story, okay? It's the story of a man named Naaman. Naaman is a mighty general, the leading general of the most powerful army in the entire world, the army of Assyria. But mighty Naaman has a terrible debilitating disease. Naaman has leprosy. And you've heard enough priests get up here and give enough homilies about leprosy. You know the story. In the days of the Bible, if you were diagnosed with leprosy, it was the end of your life as you knew it. Because you had to go apart from everyone you've ever known, everyone you've ever loved, and live in a leper colony. You would never again see your family, see your friends, see your children, see your spouse. You would rather slowly die until you finally were conquered by this disease, dying alone and in pain. It was fate worse than death. So Naaman doesn't know what to do. When suddenly, a little Hebrew girl speaks up and says, I know a prophet in the land of Israel who can cure leprosy, Elisha, the great man of God. The little girl tells her mistress, mistress tells Naaman, Naaman tells the king. King says, what do you have to lose? You might as well go down to Israel and let's really impress this prophet Elisha. So they line up an entourage worthy of a head of state and gifts worthy of a king. 10 silver talents, 6,000 gold pieces, 10 festal garments, 10 suits of armor, and a letter from the king, and a caravan filled with chariots and horses. Down Naaman goes to Israel to make an impression on the prophet Elisha, and he's astonished to discover that when he arrives, Elisha won't even come out of his tent to meet him. Elisha, rather, sends a representative out of his tent to meet with Naaman. Says, the prophet Elisha says if you want to be cured of leprosy, go wash in the Jordan River 7 times. And Naaman is furious. I've traveled all this way with all these royal gifts, and Elisha won't even pay me the courtesy of coming out to see me himself. I'm going back home. A little servant boy speaks up and he says, my lord, you've come all this way, and if the great prophet had asked you to do something mighty, certainly you would have done it. Can't you at least do this simple action? So Naaman sets aside his ego, embraces the mystery, and does what he's told. Washes 7 times, not 6 times, not 8 times, but 7 times in the Jordan River. And this is where our first reading begins. And he gets out of the Jordan River and he's perfectly cleaned of his leprosy and he worships the God of Israel. Message? When you set your ego aside and embrace God in whom you believe, even when you don't fully understand, that's when God works his mightiest deeds. Same message here in the gospel. You've heard the story, hopefully, before of Jesus and the 10 lepers, and usually when this gospel is read, the priest speaks about gratitude. But we're not going to speak about gratitude today, because you cannot have gratitude unless you first have humility, and you need humility to embrace God's mystery. Now, if you were a leper in Jesus' time, you had to go through the streets ringing a bell in front of you and crying out, unclean, unclean, so that if anybody heard you, they could keep their safe distance. Well, that's not what these lepers do when they see Jesus. They don't say, unclean, unclean. They say, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And just as an aside, you might find this interesting. The actual word that's used in Greek's gospel, in Luke's gospel in Greek, for have mercy on us is eleison me. What do we say every time we start Mass, or at least when I say Mass? Kyrie eleison. You know what that word means? It means a lot more than just Lord have mercy. It means Lord heal me, soothe me, and make me whole. It's part of the reason why I use it when we start Mass. Eleison me. Lord heal me, soothe me, and make me whole. And Jesus says to the leper something that makes no sense. He says, go show yourself to the priests. Now, if you went to see a Jewish priest after you'd already been cured of leprosy, he could investigate to make sure that you're completely cured and give you a document that allows you to rejoin the whole believing community. But the scriptures tell us that they were cured as they went to see Jesus, which means that when he sent them off to see the priest, they weren't cured of leprosy yet. Every Jewish priest carried a bag of rocks. It sounds cruel, but it's true. Carried a bag of rocks on his belt, such that if a leper came too close, he'd throw rocks at him to keep the guy away. That's all they could have expected. But they set their ego aside, embraced the mystery of God, and that's how God works so many great marvels. And that's the message for us here today. It's the reason why God is found by the poor. You know, they got nothing left to lose, and they've got very, very little ego compared with those who have it made, compared with those who are rich. It's the reason why God is a friend of the poor, but it's a lesson that we need to learn as well. It takes humility to embrace God's mercy, to embrace God's mystery. It takes humility to persevere in prayer. It takes humility to go to confession. It takes humility to be the first one to lend a hand, to try to extend the hand of peace, to bury the hatchet with someone who's hurt you, whether you even you don't know whether they're going to receive your offer of peace or not. It takes humility to continue to pray even when you don't see your prayer doing any good whatsoever, and it takes a river of humility to believe that God is in charge of this crazy messed up world, even though by all appearances it's spinning out of control in chaos. And yet when we believe, that's when God works his greatest miracles. How about you? It really comes down to you and what you choose to act on and whether you choose to believe and who you choose to look to. It's been said. If you look to the secular world, if you look to the world around you, you'll be distressed. If you look to yourself, you'll be depressed. But if you look to the Lord, you will be at rest. And that's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts.